In the Sauce is brought to you by Oatly, the vegan, plant-based oat milk originally from Sweden that's now making their oat milk on this side of the Atlantic. For more information, go to oatly.com. That's OATLY.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Kadeem Oh, founder of Mama O's Kimchi, the brand that took the staple Korean fermented condiment and made it mainstream. I'm really excited you're here today, Kadeem, because I feel like we both have, I wouldn't say totally esoteric, but I would say sort of innovative products that aren't necessarily like your average cookie or refrigerated beverage or cracker. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has both big assets and also some liabilities that we're trying to navigate. So you've been doing this for some time, and I'm psyched that you're here.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to talk about what we manufacturers and producers call living the dream.
You say that with like this like stone face on, like he, I think, means that somewhat ironically.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's great to be, you know, pursue your passion and your dreams, but it's just not all, you know, wine and roses.
Yes. I hope that the people listening to this are getting sort of a fair picture of, you know, I think that this is episode 54, and over the last 54 episodes, hopefully there's been, you know, you've heard sort of inspiring, but you've also heard like, this is not to be sort of jumped into blindly. I was reading something today that it takes that 80%, and this is from a consultant that I follow on LinkedIn named James Richardson. And it said that, you know, we all hear about these statistics about small businesses failing and don't try, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And everyone does it anyway, because we all have something in us that just makes us really want to do it. But the real data is that only 20% of food and beverage CPG brands break $500,000 in sales.
Right.
And that it's actually, you know, getting past that 500,000 is a massive hump, but it's not like once you're there, you're home free, because then the next big hump is, you know, the $1 million in sales. And there, it gets kind of, the percentage of failure likelihood gets smaller as right. you kind of cross each threshold. But that's a pretty big one, you know, 80-20 is big.
Yeah. I mean, that ratio seems to hold true to a lot of things.
Yeah.
And but even if you cross the million or cross the 3 million threshold, doesn't mean you'll be here tomorrow.
Right. But there are things that you can do to try to make sure that you are, or plan as best as possible. And we're going to get into some of those. But before we do, we're going to talk about you as a small boy.
Yay. Okay.
So you grew up in Maryland.
Yep.
Yep.
Silver Spring.
And what were you, I know that your primary like life choice has been DJ, musician. Mm-hmm. Musician? DJ?
DJ. DJing's all I ever wanted to do. And then
when you were little too?
No. When I was little, all I wanted to do was skate. So I just skated.
Got it.
Skateboarding.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
I'm very hip.
And I went to college, and after my freshman year, I spent it in New York with my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Northeastern in Boston, which was terrible. But anyhow.
but it's known as like a very entrepreneurial school. It's like you're supposed to, everyone has like active internships there. And like, it's like,
that's
like
actually
a professional place.
Yeah, that's what attracted me to the school, because it was a co-op program.
Right.
So you go to school half the time and work half the time.
Yeah.
But it was in Boston.
Yeah.
And
I know.
Enough said.
Yeah.
So I was... I spent the summer in New York, and that's when I got introduced to DJing and DJ culture. And after that, I was like, this is what I want to do.
And you've had a lot of success doing it. I mean, you've like really built a career doing it.
It's pretty crazy. I've been fortunate that this is what I've done, playing records in places such as the Kennedy Center, all around the world, in different ways. In clubs, as theater, we actually, the play that I was in, A Rhyme Deferred, we were one of the originators of hip hop theater and what is now, say, Hamilton or Freestyle Love Supreme, which is on Broadway right now.
I've heard that's amazing, by the way.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And my friend Ukarsh, who's in my band, the Beatards, he's one of the principals.
Oh, that's
play.
So cool.
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So all that is going well. You're living your life. You're in New York. You're DJing. You're making money. You have like a whole thing. And you just like were hankering for your mom's kimchi. Is this how this whole thing happened?
Yeah, I just... I had a craving for kimchi, and all the stuff in the stores was terrible.
What was in the store? This is 2009.
Yeah. So
what was in the store? Was it just, there wasn't a brand?
There's a couple brands.
Yeah.
I mean,
we don't have to throw them under the bus.
Right.
Yeah.
That are still out there. And the problem was that the flavor profile, it either was too sweet, watered down, not fermented at all.
Right.
And so I was just... I thought that it was terrible. And I also wanted to learn how to make it, because I wanted to keep that, you know, part of my heritage alive.
Right. So it was a big part of your life growing up. Like, did you have kimchi twice a day? Three? I mean, how, like, when, you know?
Like, growing up, probably, like, at least once at dinner.
Right.
And then... after you move to college, then, you know, you just
stop.
Stop, basically eat whatever's on your meal plan.
Right.
And then, there wasn't really a lot of, kimchi options available. So I just asked my mom to teach me how to make it. And, I would take the Chinatown bus.
I know. I read that somewhere, and like the image of you just getting on the bus and learning how to do kimchi on the weekends and then taking the bus back. It's like a very good image. Like, yep. I just pictured like the, you know how your label has like the kind of cartoony drawing? Like I pictured like a bus with
like dotted lines.
Yeah,
going
exactly. And like
it.
The puff puff kind of. You on the bus, getting off the bus, getting back on the bus. But so you would go. So how long did it take you to learn how to make the kimchi?
I would do that. I did that for a few months. So going back and forth, probably about 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And
I'm like, I'm not an expert, obviously, in kimchi. But tell me a little bit, like, what the process is. Like, you're mixing. It's not always just cabbage, right? Is it?
It's not always just cabbage. There's kimchi actually means pickled vegetable in Korean.
Okay.
But when you talk about kimchi, mostly you're usually talking about Napa cabbage.
Yeah.
However, there's daikon radish, perilla leaves, sesame leaves. You can kimchi almost anything. If it's a vegetable, you can probably kimchi it, but don't use potatoes.
Got it. Like it blows up?
No, just raw potatoes aren't that good
for
you.
Okay. So then the process is similar to making a pickle? Like are you boiling a liquid and then letting it ferment and produce.
Yeah, no. Right. So it's actually, it's a little different from that. It's a raw product. Nothing's heated over 115 degrees.
Oh, interesting.
And so it's all just natural lacto fermentation. So, to walk you through Napa cabbage, you take a cabbage, quarter it. Well, this is one way. This is mock kimchi. Mock kimchi means fast kimchi. But it still takes the same time. But you take the cabbage, you quarter it, chop it into about 1.5-inch size pieces, brine it in salt water overnight.
Okay.
There are actually two different ways. You can brine it, or you can sprinkle it with salt and then wash it off.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer brining because it's more consistent and it's less labor.
Right.
You'll know that'll be a consistent theme.
I'm picking up on that. Yeah. Right.
And then, then after that, then you season it with the chili powder, the salt, garlic, ginger, green onions. It's a Korean parsley called minari.
Mm.
However, I use cilantro because I actually like, I'm one of the people that like cilantro. I think it you know, gives a little freshness boost to the flavor.
And is that recipe the kind of thing that, like, from mother to mother, essentially, they have their own, like, but I use use 2 tablespoons instead of 1, and this makes my kimchi the best kimchi. Is it that kind of, like?
Well, the funny thing with kimchi is that there's the recipe. I mean, I think it's like the flavor is passed down, because when you make kimchi, it doesn't taste the same as when you make it as when you eat it.
Right, because it's the fermentation.
Right, because the fermentation is changing on, like, the molecular level.
Right.
So, and everything is, it's called sonma. It's like literally means hand taste.
Uh-huh.
And so you're just doing hand measures. You, like, you throw some salt in, you throw some sugar in, you mix it up, you taste it. And it needs a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that. And so kind of finding that flavor,
yep,
because then it will turn into the flavor that you
eventually want.
Yeah.
So how long does it, and then it just sits out and it does its thing on its own?
Yeah, you just let it sit room temperature a day. And so the big, you know, story with kimchi is that it's buried in the ground. And the reason why is because kimchi is an ancient food.
Yeah.
It predates man-made electricity.
Yeah.
So burying it in the ground was a way to preserve it, because if you live below the permafrost level, anything below the ground is not going to freeze.
Right.
Yet it's going to be, you know,
cool.
Colder.
Yeah.
Cool in temperature.
Do you ferment your kimchi underground?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, that's very artisanal of you.
Yeah, but. Yeah. That, once again, remember, I like to do less work.
Right, so, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So after letting it sit maybe a day room temp, then throw it in the fridge so that it cold ferments. And it's actually better to do it that way, to just immediately throw it in there.
Right.
And it'll take longer to ferment, but your vegetables will end up crisper.
Crisper. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's interesting because I had Alex on from Pilot, and we were talking about, does it have an alcohol? Like, is there any alcohol in it, or not really, because it doesn't produce that when it ferments?
Right. It will produce it, but it will take a very, very long time.
Very long time. Right. Yeah. And was there any issue with, like, So you figured out how to make it, and then what was the decision, instead of I'm just going to make this for me and my friends because I'm craving it, to I'm going to try to put this in a package and sell it to restaurants and stores? Like, what was the logic there?
Right. Well, there was no real decision about that. It was kind of a spot decision. I was buying some ribs from my butcher to make some kalbi, Korean barbecue.
Yeah.
And
so you're a good cook?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
All right, cool.
I make a few good
things. I'm glad we got that settled, because you're talking and I'm getting hungry, and that usually happens when I'm talking.
Okay,
to someone.
All right. Well, now my girlfriend will say I'm a good cook.
Okay, cool. Well,
but then I was not. Then
okay.
I was not.
That's fair. Okay. Yeah. So you're at your butcher and you're making, you know, ribs.
I'm buying some ribs, and he's like, "Oh, you eat that with kimchi and rice, eating like a king." And I'm like, what do you know, 50-year-old Jewish guy with the ponytail?
Right.
And he's like, "Oh, I used to work with Korean guys. I love this stuff." So I was like, "All right, cool. I make it. I'll bring some by."
Ah.
So I brought some by. I checked up on it, and I was like, "What'd you think?" And he said, "I love it." And this is exactly...
How did you bring it to him? Like in a jar?
Just in like a Tupperware container.
Okay, all right.
And this is exactly what I said. I said, "You know, I sell this shit."
Even though you didn't.
Even though I didn't.
Right.
And then he said, I want to start carrying it. And then, and so at that point, then I was like, oh, okay, I got to come up with the name,
so that's
insurance.
Fake it till you make it.
Fake, yes, yes.
I'm writing that down.
Well, yeah, because I thought that there was potential for,
right.
Because there's a void in the market.
Yeah, for sure.
There isn't any good kimchi there. But,
well, it's yeah. really interesting because like I'm thinking like 2009, 2010. That is like the beginning of like the Brooklyn mm-hmm. boom
yeah,
a little bit.
Totally.
It's like jam makers and mustard and chocolate.
Van Leeuwen
right,
ice cream.
Totally. And so I can see that, but what you could not have predicted at that time was this like newfound obsession with probiotics.
Right.
So that must have just been like a massive shift in your business, but we'll get there. We'll get
there. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was totally lucky that I, you know, rode this probiotic wave
which
as well.
Which is, I mean, it is something that like the American diet has been like sorely missing for a very long time. So that's, there are a lot of American kind of fad diets that I think candidly are just like kind of BS and sort of like made up.
Yeah.
And a lot of it really isn't clinically proven in any way. But probiotics happen to be like very much like a clinically proven thing,
right.
Especially food-based probiotics versus supplement-based probiotics. So,
yeah.
All right, we'll get there though. So you were like, I sell this shit. And then you had to go find out how to package it. You
right.
had to get insured. You had to like figure out if it was legal. You had to get a logo.
Yep.
So how did you attack all of those things? And is there any advice you have? Anything you wish you had done differently or anything that you actually feel like you did really right in that sort of time frame that you would advise people who are listening?
Huh. Did I do anything right? I'm probably not the best person to get business advice on because I just...
But it's been around for 11 years.
Right,
and it has
right.
lasted and it is yeah. doing well. So there is something in here that is worth digging around to find out what you think you did right.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, probably the first right thing I did was name it after my mom.
Yes.
I named it Mama O's in homage to my mom, Mama O.
It was a very good call.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I was tossing around names. I was like, my name's Kadeem and my initials are OK. I was like, OK Kimchi. And then that one quickly got, got the boot. And then, figuring out a good name, something that, is relatable to people. And then, I didn't have any money when I started this. I started this with like $50 just to buy a case of cabbage.
Right.
And then I had the skateboard to wheel the cabbage home after I took the Chinatown bus, back from DC because I couldn't afford a taxi.
Wow.
So, I just enlisted all my friends, talented
creatives.
Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you got your logo and you got your package design.
Mm-hmm.
And then how did you figure out what was legal to sell in the state of New York or did you not?
Oh,
really
no,
care?
I didn't like everybody. I started in my kitchen.
Right.
And which is totally illegal.
Yeah.
But everyone does it.
Everyone does it.
And I found out the only things that are legal in New York are baked goods. So you can make cookies and cakes, and that's why like bake sales are legal.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so interesting. Now who's the Snapple?
Snapple back cap.
Okay, so you bring him some jars. Slap on a label.
Mm-hmm. A sticker.
Yeah. It gets sold.
Yep.
He wants more. When did you decide, all right, I should probably start figuring out how to make this a thing?
Oh, man, that was probably like, well, okay, so it came down to, if you fast forward about 2 years later, what I did was I bounced around. I couldn't make it in my building anymore because every time I make it, I would light the whole building up and the whole building would know. And so I bounced around a couple of commercial kitchens in Brooklyn, but it was just too expensive, and commercial kitchens just didn't work with what I did because
right.
they, commercial kitchens are normally like 8-hour shifts.
Yep.
Whereas I need to...
You need it to just sit there
right,
and do nothing, right? Right.
So my friend's husband offered me his restaurant in Woodbridge, New Jersey.
To make into a, like a production facility?
No, no.
Just to use his space.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
So,
that's great.
So I took up that invitation and I was making it out there, but that was really difficult because it took like 3 trains to get out there.
And by this point, did you have more than that one butcher?
I had that butcher and Marlowe and Daughters.
Mm-hmm.
That was the second place I went to.
Yeah.
And
they were really on the cutting edge of a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah.
They had like all of like the groovy kids early on. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Foragers. So I probably
them
had
too.
Those
right.
those three accounts. And, you know, I'm delivering it on the subway, you know, bringing a case
right.
on the train.
And you had to keep it refrigerated?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know.
Within 4 hours.
Yeah, throwing ice back on top.
Right.
But it was super, super difficult because trying to do all of that, it just wasn't really sustainable.
Right.
So at that point, I was actually start a restaurant because I was going to start a restaurant with Eddie Huang, who did Bauhaus.
Yeah.
And we were going to do a restaurant together because I needed a place to make the kimchi. Yet I couldn't afford any rent anywhere.
Right, right.
But then, you know, the thing with restaurants, most of them, you know, go under in within a year. And then if that happened, then both things would go under.
Right.
So what I ended up doing was my parents suggested that I buy this bodega in Ridgewood, Queens,
uh-huh.
that was pretty inexpensive, 5 figures, and allegedly cash flow positive, allegedly.
Uh-huh.
And so, but they have a Schedule 20C license, so that meant
they
could make
produce.
It there,
yep.
I could produce there and then sell.
So you would run the bodega, that would be a business that you would run, and you'd be selling all the stuff and like doing the normal sort of business. But in the back, the real business would be making the kimchi. As long as this thing didn't lose money, you were fine.
Right. And so so for the first 6 months, it was just, I worked there every single hour was open from 6:30 in the morning till 10 p.m. at night, 7 days a week, because I need to learn it. But even more importantly, because it was just me and the sandwich guy.
Right.
And like, I've never run a deli before.
Yeah. I mean, you had to order stuff and like learn how to do inventory and
And
just to make the kimchi.
But and I couldn't even really order stuff because I'd have to wake up extra early, go to Restaurant Depot, buy the stuff, get to the deli before 6:30.
This is a great story.
It's something. it's much better, you know, in hindsight, in retrospect. Sure.
So all of this is happening and something kept you going though, because clearly you felt like you were onto something or orders were starting to come in or people were saying, we want this. Like what was driving you? I mean, you created like an entire life apparatus around this thing. But the thing itself had to have been compelling.
Well, what was compelling was homelessness. Like,
but so the kimchi was keeping you like paying you money.
No. It still wasn't making money that much
That's
money. But
why I'm confused.
It was the. I thought it was a good idea. I thought it was. I made a good product, and then. Once I was in the deli, that's when I got my first distributor. And so once I got a distributor, that's what allowed me to scale up production because before that, I was just going around and like making it and then delivering it everywhere.
Right.
And then once you get a distributor, then they come and pick it up.
Right.
And then they take it to all the stores
and
for you.
And arguably, they can also help you find stores that will take it.
Yeah, but most distributors really don't do that.
They might say they do.
Yeah, but most don't.
So here's the big question then. So when were you like, okay, I have a real business? like, this is something now that works and I'm going to do it?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been in business for about 11 years, and I would say maybe it was about 4 years ago.
Right. Which, by the way, according to James Richardson, the same article that I read about that 80%, I'm going to misquote it, but it's basically like it takes 10 years for a company to like get to a place where it could potentially exit. That's like average. Mm-hmm. But it takes that doesn't count like the 3 to 4 years that it takes just getting to that $500,000 part.
Right.
So when we're going to take a little break, we're going to get back, and then we're going to talk about everything from that moment on.
Sounds great.
Awesome. In the Sauce is brought to you by Oatly, the vegan plant-based oat milk originally from Sweden that's now making their oat milk on this side of the Atlantic. About 30 years ago, in a small town in Sweden, a scientist invented oat milk, and everyone thought he was totally crazy. But remember, back then, vegans were weirdos on the fringes of society. Unlike today, when vegans are everywhere and include some of the world's most famous weirdos and non-weirdos on Earth. Actually, it is true that today, more and more people in the U.S. and around the world are starting to understand the benefits of eating and drinking plants, so their bodies feel good and the planet can cope better with the impact we humans place on it. So here's a sort of deep question. If 30 years ago people thought oat milk was a ridiculous idea, imagine how different people's beliefs about food could be in 30 years from now. Are we going to be looking back on our barbaric meat-eating ancestors of the early 2000s? Anyway, since this is an ad for Oatly, I should mention that one easy way to go more plant-based is just to switch from cow's milk to oat milk. It tastes really great, it foams really well, and you can just ask the baristas at Haven's Kitchen how popular it is. To find out more than you'd ever want to know about oat milk, go to oatly.com. That's OATLY.com. Or look for Oatly on Instagram at OATLY.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe. Taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
I'm back with Kadeem Oh, founder of Mama O's Kimchi. Okay, so it's 2013. It's been 4 years. You feel like you have a business. You have a great idea. You have a distributor. Are you still making it in the back of the bodega?
No, that's about the time that I moved into the Pfizer building, which is where I am now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've been there. It's very cool. It's like all these food entrepreneurs and just
it's insanity.
Making
yeah.
amazing things. Yeah. So you got a space, which is cool. Were you able to afford it with the proceeds from the kimchi?
I was able to do it from the sale of the
bodega.
Deli.
Yeah. Ah, that's great. Yeah. That's cool. Okay.
I mean, basically I just took the money that I got from selling that, and it's, let me tell you, well, first of all, I lost money. I had to sell it at a loss,
right.
But I took whatever money I had left over from that. And I invested it in building out the space.
Amazing.
And yeah.
And the rent was still reasonable. And
back then, yes, the rent was still reasonable.
Right.
And if you'd seen my space, you'll realize why I did a 10-year lease. I'm on the top floor. I've probably an insane view of the Manhattan skyline. Oh. Yeah, it's amazing. So.
And so what equipment did you need to build other than just like a lot of storage and refrigerated storage?
Yeah. So I had to build the walk-in cooler. Built that, put in sinks, hot water heater, floor drain.
Right. I guess you're inspected
by
agriculture,
ag and markets. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely an interesting way to go. You didn't really have the opportunity to go to a co-packer. I mean, no one would have known how to do
right.
it, really.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, and I've even looked in the not too distant past for co-packers because I was looking to scale up in certain ways. And there just aren't a lot there that can do it.
That know how to do it.
Know how to do it.
Right. Yeah. What was like the first big break? Was Whole Foods like the first big break?
Yeah. I would say Whole Foods was like probably the first big break because once I started selling it in the Northeast, then I started doing all the salad bars for the Northeast.
Oh.
And that was crazy.
So like, can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
Because that's actually something we don't talk about that often. A lot of times we end up talking about just like the retail packaged product.
Right.
But I think a lot of us have products that really do make sense for sort of like that food service piece, whether it's like the Whole Foods salad bar or, you know, a sauce at a fast casual place that doesn't want to spend the labor and the time making.
Right.
Did you think about that sort of, did you have a strategy or a plan? Were you like, this would make a good idea here? Or was it something that kind of came to you and they're like, we'd like to have some kimchi and we think yours would be great?
Yeah, that was basically it. I mean, right. just assume that there was no plan.
You had no plan.
Yeah,
right.
Just no plan ever.
Do you have a plan now?
Yeah, actually I do. And it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Because I think that's...
Well, you're knee deep in. Like, you better get a plan now.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
This has been like 11 years of your life, my friend.
After this amount of time.
Right.
You know, I'm a slow learner. And so, but like, I've had a lot of life experience. And then it kind of comes back to me. And it's like, oh, actually, this makes sense. So I'm all for food service. I think food service is great.
Yeah.
You just, you know, slap a sticker on it,
send it
out the door.
Yep.
Volume is, you know, it's. I think it's better to do more volume than to have like a, you know, higher price. But
well, let's talk about that just for a second, because the people listening tend to either be starting their own thing or they're kind of either where we are a little, probably, I would say, a few steps behind. And where you are, where I am. I don't know where we are.
Sure.
But there's kind of two ways to think about food service. There's two ways to sort of think about the product. There's like the brand and building the brand and having people know your name.
Yes.
And then there's the volume.
Right.
And just the sheer number of pounds or, you know, ounces of whatever it is that you're making. Ideally, you're building both at the same time.
Right.
Ideally, you're selling a lot and you're also getting the brand out there.
Right.
In food service, sometimes people just, they don't care that it's like Haven's Kitchen Chimichurri, let's say. Uh-huh. They just need like a gallon of chimichurri in a bag so that they have it because they don't want their team in the back having to mince oregano and garlic and whatnot.
Right.
It's probably going to be, on our end, it's not going to be at the price point per ounce that the retail product is.
Right.
It's also not going to do much to build the brand unless you have like a special arrangement where they say, and you know, Mama owes kimchi.
Sure.
Usually
sure.
it's just going to say kimchi.
Right.
But so it's always like a little bit of a trade-off. And there are people that are like, when you're early, focus on the brand. And then there are other people that are like, when you're early, focus on volume.
No, I disagree with them. I'm with focus on the brand, create the cult following. That's what you have to do or what you should do.
Right.
In my opinion, because, this is the thing, you have to make a product that is unique.
Yeah,
because someone's always going to be able to come and undercut you on price.
Right. Or you're making a commodity.
Yeah, exactly.
So cult following.
Yes.
So that required you educating people who didn't know what kimchi was. And this is why I think it's so helpful for me to meet you, because people know what sauce is. They don't necessarily know what chimichurri is or romesco or harissa.
Right.
And they certainly don't know why it's in a pouch and why it's in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've never seen that. So a lot of what our job is just really educating consumers, like, what is this thing in this pouch? Why is it orange and what do I do with it?
Right.
So I feel like you have some experience sort of teaching people, what is this thing called kimchi?
Mm.
What do I do with it?
Mm.
You know, how did you get it? Obviously, you were, as we said before, your timing was really good,
mm-hmm.
because all things kind of global flavors for sure, mm-hmm. especially global flavors that are also like functional and probiotic, mm-hmm. for sure. Mm-hmm. You're riding a wave, which is great. But you also probably did a lot of work on your own, whether you're going to admit it or not, to like educate people on what it is and how to use it and to build that cult following. Mm-hmm. So like, what did you do to make people love you?
Right. But first of all, I want to commend you on your packaging and aesthetics.
Thank
because
you.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense because
you squeeze it.
You squeeze right. it. And that way, but when you do that too, you're eliminating air out of the packaging. So
yes.
it's not purely form, it's functional
yes.
as well. And it's minimal at the same time,
yeah.
which I appreciate.
Thank you.
There's just a lot of education that goes with kimchi because even though everyone says, oh yeah, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the times people are just, you know, lying to you. They're like, because they haven't eaten, because I'm like, really?
Really?
Why? Right. Why? Because all this stuff out there is terrible.
Right.
And so, I've done a lot of different. So I do an event once a year called Kimchi Palooza.
You've been doing that for a while now.
I'm going on my 10th year.
Yeah.
Next year will be the 10th year. And so it's.
What is it, Kimchi Palooza?
Kimchi Palooza is a celebration of all things kimchi. And
so do you invite other kimchi makers to come?
I have. Well, I've done a homemade kimchi contest and a cooking
that's
with kimchi
fun.
Contest.
When's the next one?
It's going to be in August 20th, 2020.
Cool.
And
DM me and
gotcha.
I'll connect you to Kadeem if you want tickets to Kimchi Palooza.
And it's free. And it's
okay,
free.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. And cool. and free kimchi all day. It's going to be at Arrogant Swine in Bushwick. And what I really love about that place is it's in Bushwick and it's an industrial zone.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are no noise problems, so
right.
I could have bands there.
Ah.
So I have bands performing, right. DJs performing.
So by the way, when we're talking about like, hey, brands out there, how do you... This is really helpful.
Mm.
So this is really helpful because we're talking about like, how do you build a cult following?
Mm-hmm.
And most people would say like, I demo, right?
Mm.
What you're saying is you brought your music stuff...
Mm-hmm.
And like your whole vibe, right?
Yeah.
And your product. And you created a festival
mm-hmm.
basically around your product. Like that
right.
is something you did very right.
It's like the Nathan's hot dog eating contest.
Right.
So that's why I had a super spicy eating competition. So because I wanted something to, you know, within 80 years, I could rival it. So.
Yeah.
So it's growing. There isn't any other like super spicy kimchi contest, and
no.
it's just hilarious.
No, it's great. And then, do you sell the kimchi at the Kimchi Palooza?
I sell a little bit. Like
that's
if people
not even
wanna,
the point.
Yeah, if people want to take it home, but it's
yeah.
really about like giving to people. You know, giving to people that have been supporting
yeah.
me all these years. So I book, you know, bands that perform, different DJs.
So cool.
And this year was the first time I had an art competition because, it's kind of like a sip and paint. So,
right.
Beyond kimchi, it's you know, really promoting the things that I think are important, which is, health,
mm-hmm.
good food, friends, and art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So how did the paste come up? Because we were talking about it, I think, before we turned on the speakers
mm-hmm.
or the microphones, I guess. And I was saying that like a lot of people that I talked to before you and I did this, they like the kimchi a
mm-hmm.
lot. They can't eat kimchi all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they love the paste because they can put it on everything.
Right.
And it's almost like a better, juicier, more savory, more satisfying hot sauce, essentially, for them, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't, you weren't like, now I'm going to innovate to make something shelf stable, or like you, right. It just kind of came out of what?
Right, well, I needed a way to make kimchi more quickly and consistently. So this is
the theme, right?
Yeah, easier, right. Always easier. But you know, if you're creating a commercial product, it has to be the same every time,
yep.
Or you're an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, and the way that I learned it was hand measures and tasting it. So I needed a way to.
I was actually going to ask you about that earlier when you said like the hand testing. I was like, well, they need formulas.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. So basically, we reverse engineered the recipe because, you know, you start out with a pound of sugar, a pound of salt, this, right. And then it measure it afterwards,
right.
You know, afterwards what's left.
Yep.
And then that's, you know, what you used.
Right.
So we figured out the recipe from that after, you know, making good batches. And then I scaled it up so that I can make it, you know, in larger amounts than for one batch.
Right.
And so, That's why I made it. That's why I called it kimchi paste. But then it's really well balanced, and so it's terrific as a condiment, flavor enhancer, soup.
Yeah. And it's shelf stable.
And it's shelf stable.
So this is another thing we were talking about, because you know, for all you people thinking about quitting your day jobs and starting food and beverage brands. You know, I'm never going to say I regret having a fresh product or a refrigerated product. I think it's kind of what makes us different. And I don't think we'd be doing as well if it was shelf stable.
Right.
That being said, the cost of doing a refrigerated product is a lot more. If we were making our sauce shelf stable, it would probably cost us half.
Oh, yeah.
At least. And that's just the making of it. That's not including the shipping of it and the storing of it.
Right.
So like the margins on the product just go like down and down and down when you have like a frozen truck and a refrigerated truck and you have to keep it in a cold room while you're transferring it. So were you like, oh, yay, psych, this is now much less expensive for me to make?
Oh, I was ecstatic. I was like, yeah. Yeah, I've got a product, you know, that general stores can carry, you know, everyone can carry. But the problem that I run into is that there's the good and the bad of it is that there's no other product like it on the market. The bad thing is there's nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
that's the asset and the liability.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what makes it kind of fun, because I think if you figure out what your assets are and then you like take your liabilities and look at them as challenges, you know, yeah. So where do you sit on the shelf? So now the paste is in all the Whole Foods.
Right.
Everywhere.
Right.
Across the whole country.
Yes.
So that had to be a very exciting moment
for
you.
That was super exciting. But to be honest, I thought it was going to be a one-off. I was like, all right, they're going to order this once and then that's it.
Right.
Because people don't
know what it is.
Yeah. Don't know what it is. However, it's been doing decent. It's doing well. It's not like gangbusters.
It can't be. I think ketchup, I think the national, it's like 2 units per store per week is like the velocity for a condiment. Right. That's the average. So you're not going to be like crushing ketchup.
Right.
But if you can just be even close, you know, just getting close to that for like a shelf stable condiment that people, is it probiotic when it's like that or it's not because it's not the fermented?
No,
right.
It's not. It is slowly fermenting,
right.
But it's not probiotic. But however, because of that, I decided to jump into the hot sauce realm.
Right.
Because that is where it's at.
Yeah, that's a huge booming market.
Huge. Yeah. The hot sauce market is larger than ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise, all of it combined.
Yep.
And there's no, like, sky's the limit with hot sauce. Like, people were like, oh, $100 a bottle? Sure.
Right.
But it actually came from a need of mine where I like sriracha, but I just find it just too cloyingly sweet.
Yeah.
It's just so sweet. I can't do it. Like, I don't like sweet eggs.
You like that little pickly.
Yeah. I like the tang. I like the vinegar tang. I want some garlic in there and I want a little bit of some spice, but I just don't deal well with the sweet. So this was kind of like my version of sriracha minus the excessive sweetness.
So are you going to keep doing the sauce and the paste and the fresh fermented kimchi?
Mm-hmm.
And are they all, you have them all in different sort of sales? Like, you don't sell, mm-hmm. I'm assuming you don't sell everything direct. You probably sell the paste and the hot sauce.
I do everything online. I do everything direct
online.
Even
the fresh?
Yes.
And how do you ship that?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So that is... Actually, I just figured out a key component of that, which is the packaging.
Uh-huh.
But what I was doing was I created I've been in business for 11 years. I started the website maybe 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's still like plenty of places in the States that kimchi's just not available.
Right.
So I started, package the kimchi in these resealable, you know, zip stand-up pouches.
Right.
But the problem with the pouches is that once they're sealed, they don't let any gas escape. And so they would explode.
Yeah.
So right. I would have that. I had that problem. I had lots
exploding
of bags.
Exploding cabbage all over the place.
The postal service hated
me.
Probably still do. And so then the way around it was to use these really bigger bags so it would have room for the gas to expand.
Right.
But it would still even happen with that.
Yeah.
And
there are these things that, like, I've seen, like, sauerkraut things,
yes.
and they put in, and they're like these little, like, sachets or something. Or
right.
Like they go in and do they, like, absorb
right.
air?
Right, gas eater packs. But I don't, I'm just not into that because it's just more chemicals that are around your food.
Got it.
And so... So I just switched from glass to these stand-up pouches with ferment vents.
Cool.
So they have vents that allow the kimchi to live and breathe
awesome.
Without the bag blowing up. And so that's kind of been the last key to my puzzle on how I'm going to be able to ship fresh product, because now that I can make it in the bag and it can sit there. And I don't have to worry about shipping it out that day before the bag explodes.
Right. That that would be a relief.
But but this took me years to figure out.
I mean, I think it's very cool because you've got a lot figured out. You're like super chill about it in a way. You're kind of the opposite of a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are like, I've got it all figured out, and they have like not really lived it. Okay, so you sell directly on your website.
Mm-hmm.
You sell everything on Amazon or anything?
No, I don't
Amazon?
Sell anything on Amazon, though I have seen people sell my stuff on Amazon.
Weird.
And they'll buy it from me or they'll buy it from a store and then sell it on Amazon.
That's weird. So the stores are really your biggest, and
stores.
then there's food service. And are you actively pursuing, like, are you kind of trying to build out as much as you can each one of those sales channels? Like, are you actively pursuing food service accounts? And
yes.
Yeah. But is it still only you or do you have a team?
No, it is basically just me.
That's
so
crazy.
I have people that I ask advice to.
Yeah.
But
you're making it all, you're selling it.
Yeah.
You're
I do very little of the production now because I don't have time to do it.
Right. So there are people doing production.
Right.
Okay, great.
Right. But like, you know, marketing, direction, all of this. And you know, I'm not a business guy. You know, I'm a music guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could have an argument about that, but.
That said, I'm a hustler though.
Yeah.
I mean, you've
got a great product that people love and that's pretty cool. All right. Last couple of minutes. What's your goal now? Like, do you want to keep it going the way it is? Do you want to make it big and get it sold? Do you want to,
pass
it down?
I'd lie if I said I didn't have a number, but the number's up there.
Right.
You know, after all the strife and blood, tears and sweat. And you know, the whole idea of passing it down, like, I mean, I didn't want to become a dry cleaner. You know, my dad tried to pass down his business to me, and I was like, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you're either going to sell it or you're going to have it when you die. And so it's kind of better to sell it.
Right. But also, on the other hand, I firmly believe in doing something that you enjoy.
Yeah.
And
so you're having a good time.
And, yeah. And I, you know, I enjoy this because it's positive. It helps people, and it's creative as well.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Last moment, your best moment in all these 11 years. Like, I'm sure there've been many, I say this every time, but there's a moment where you're like, this feels really good, and I am like locked and loaded and psyched. Can you think of one?
It's funny that you say that, because it's when I got into Fairway.
Uh-huh.
I was really celebrating. I have the scar to prove it.
Oh,
but then I sold it to him like 3 times, and then that was it. So, you know.
But you know what?
That's food in a nutshell.
You got to celebrate the wins, because it's, you know, it's like bad, 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 good.
Yeah.
Bad, 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 good, good, bad, 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 good. And, you know, you got to. Should I do that again, Maddie? Do you think? See, you think you're a musician, but I am also making beats with my mouth. All right, Kadeem, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Where can people buy Mama O's?
I'm available at Whole Foods, Williams Sonoma, all your better bodegas, and online at kimchirules.com.
Kimchirules.com. All right. Thank you so much for coming on. And for those of you listening, I'll be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.